Miss Pam Dunnett, and this is Reel 4. You were saying about the VIP visits in the Western Desert, you know, when you were based in Cairo. Did you have any in Europe? Did you have VIPs apart from General Horrocks who came round?
Oh, well, he was in command of 30 Corps. I mean, not as a patient. I didn't have him as a patient.
No, but did he come round?
No. Oh, he came round. He came and visited us frequently. Yes, and he came and told us what was going on and when we were likely to have an influx of patients. Oh, they take good keeping this in mind. Yes. Well, this very charming. I know quite a lot of... I can't remember the names of all of them, of course, but...
Yes, and did you always feel, you know, in this work you were doing, and very long periods and very extreme conditions, did the system sort of continue and remain effective right the way through?
I think all through to the end, yes. It was when it was all over that I felt that I had to stay out there, you see, for until the December. Because, I mean, I don't know why, but they put me on to visit the various units. And I used to go around and sort of see if they've got occupational therapy and things like that and see if there's anything they needed. I had a drive and a staff car to go around and see this place. But I don't think I did very much good. It just wasn't as strange as I decided.
And this would have been in Germany, would it?
Yeah.
Yes. How did you get on then? You know, this would have been post-war Germany.
Yes,
is that right?
We didn't know much of post-war Germany because we didn't meet many people, really. Not the local people. We didn't meet them. We only sort of really were in touch with the various army centres, you know, where these people were. I suppose there were convalescent homes and places like that. You see, they went on, they had the hospitals out there, I suppose, long after the war, they had to. And also, I suppose, they were treating Germans. What do you mean? When we were in France on one occasion, you know, these Richard Germans had booby-trapped a lot of adult children's toys. We treated quite a number of civilians, you know, in France. I remember one dear little girl with curly hair, and her doll had been the trip. Oh, there was two dreadful things. We didn't have all the men. We had some, though, quite a few, but we treated them all.
So, when you stayed on after the war, where would you have been based then?
I was at Rotenburg. Rotenburg. Near the University of, what's the name of the university up there? Begins with a G. I can't remember.
Not to worry, yeah, not to worry. Yeah. Mm. Not Göttingen. Göttingen?
Not Göttingen. Göttingen.
Yes.
Something like that. Yes. We're quite near there, Rittenberg. But, yes, I didn't get home
till
December.
And were you demob then? When you got.
Yes.
So that would have been demob December 1945.
Yes.
Yes. How did you relate to the QAs? Did you feel very much part of a sort of unit?
Yes. Because we were not with the regulars. I didn't come up against many regulars, you know, because the regulars, they always seem rather snooty because, well, they're naturally. But I didn't meet many of them. The matron on the hospital ship was a regular. But none of the others were, that I remember, that I was with anyway. And, there's one thing I didn't tell you, I don't know if you're interested in it. We were the first British into Brussels. And I took over the St. Pierre Hospital in Brussels with one other nurse, sister and myself, Peggy Cramer, who also was dead now. And we went in with this team, and it was absolutely chock-a-block with casualties. I mean, we could hardly cope with them. And what I tried to do was to get as many evacuated as possible and get them home, because we couldn't cope with nursing them. But while we were there, we were given a room upstairs, and I did the day shift, and this other sister did the night shift. And there were only the two of us when we first went in for the first 3 days. And We had nothing to eat except some watery soup and some grapes and some lager, and that was all there was. And for about 48 hours we worked on it and tried to deal with all these casualties. It was dreadful. But it all came to an end eventually, of course. Mm-hmm. We were so hopping mad, Peggy's Kramer and I, because a unit was sent out with 22, a hospital with 22 staff, and those assisted there. And they put on, the army were there by that time, and they put on a meal. And there was a jolly good meal of corned beef and what have you. And they said, oh, you live very well here. We said nothing, we were glad to get out of it. But we did go into St. Pierre Hospital in Brussels. That was the first, we were the first, Peggy and I went in, the first two British nurses.
And who had been running that before you went in?
The Germans. They were running, and they had wonderful, wonderful equipment. Oh, beautiful. As a matter of fact, I've got a pair of scissors in my work basket, surgical scissors, but brought everything. I'm so feeling. But they had wonderful equipment.
And would the patients then have been mixed, sort of allied and nexus?
They must have been, yes, then. But by that time, I mean, there were still things going on around about. We had finished the war, wasn't finished by any means.
How about the German doctors and the medical staff? Were you able to work with them in the Saint-Pierre?
Well, we didn't meet them at the any time. I think the colonel told us that they were pretty top chaps, you know, working with them. We didn't really come across them because they were told to clear out when we took over. We pushed them out and said, you know, and looked after our own people. I think they were allowed to stay in one section to look after their own German prisoners. But we took over the English ones. As I said, there were so many. I was evacuating people, a man with jaundice, which I shouldn't have done. But I mean, we couldn't cope. And when you've had these, when they've got people that had partial gastrectomies, you know, half of the stomach went away, you had to pump out the fluid every so often to keep the things moving. And it was really hard work. I couldn't cope. We got to the stage, I say, where we were evacuated, all and sundry, as many as were able to go, to make way so that we could really cope with the sick ones. But then after 3 days, this hospital moved in, so that was all right. Mm-hmm.
What was the most hectic and worrying part of being in a CCS for you? I mean, you went through France, Belgium, Holland, Germany.
Yeah.
When you look back, what is the period you feel was the most demanding?
Well, the Arnhem show, you know, that was pretty grim all around there. When we were just beside the bridge at Nijmegen Bridge, you know, we were stationed very near there, just the other side of the water. And that, I suppose, it was pretty hectic. And I know that one evening, that was raging, and I know that the chaps round about were saying, see, I'm not another one, they were coming, dropping, you know, shedding round about us. That was pretty grim. There was one other occasion, Peggy Kramer and I, we seemed to be pushed about together, but there was a place, the crossing of the Mars. Mers or Mars, as you call it.
That's the MAAS.
MAAS, yes. And MAAS, that's right, yes. And again, we were sent forward to take over a site, and we were pushed into what we call the Railway Tavern. And we were only there for one night, making way for the others to come. And my goodness me, the bombs are falling all around about us, I remember. One medical officer was with us. And there was a billiard room there, and we all crept under and sat under the billiard table. It was only one night, but I remember that was pretty scary. It really was.
You were saying earlier on that it didn't really worry you too much, these sort of dangers.
It didn't really. I don't think I was ever really all that frightened. I wasn't really frightened. Didn't care for it much, but it was a bit very noisy. Yeah. No, I don't think I ever really feared.
How about your other nurses, the other nurses?
Oh, they were pretty good, you know. I don't think that any of them had to work worse on in any way. Had to be transferred for any reason. Well, I think they're pretty tough. I noticed that one or two were transferred elsewhere or went back to a station. But you see, as nearly as Swan would tell you, we were supposed to be hand-picked for these forward jobs. and I think possibly we might well have been. I mean, we were not the only, we were the only casualty clearing stations in the 30 Corps, but there were others in other areas, and I'm quite sure they had as hectic a time as we did, but in a different area.
Would they have had women?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Yes, they would have had to. I'm quite sure of it.
Yes. Do you yourself think, you know, you were talking about your Major Gordon and his attitude that women at the front, you know, was a good thing. Do you think it was good for morale?
I do think so. I think so. Yes. Yes, I think so. I guess I'm sure of it because they just felt, you know, some of these people are very sick and they must have had their thoughts on home, you know, and people and their own families. And I think to feel that if there was a woman there, they thought, well, it can't be too bad, you know, if they're here, they wouldn't put them up in the front. Too far. That's what they thought.
You've mentioned once or twice the Padres.
Did they
serve a very useful purpose?
Really, they're awfully good going around. There was one, a little Scotsman, he was lovely. What was his name? I can't remember his name now, but he was a nice chap. If we had the odd parties in between, you know, and we always put him in charge of the bar. He didn't drink, but he loved everybody, he was so good. Then we had another chap, an Englishman called Henderson Big, and he was a bit grand, but awfully nice fellow, terribly nice fellow, we liked him. And then there was a Catholic padre who was an Irishman. He was very nice too, they were all awfully good. Yes, I think they helped a lot, sure they did. And they were not, you know, they didn't mind. They'd give a hand with a stretch of bearing and all sorts of jobs as well. You see, very good, very accommodating. Mm.
And important for the men, do you think?
Oh, yes.
To have padres.
Oh, undoubtedly. I'm sure of it. Yes, I'm quite sure of it. Yes. Yes. Mm.
You were saying earlier the satisfaction you gained from your war work. Is that, you know,
very much
were
so.
You doing what you wanted to?
Yes. Oh, yes. I wouldn't have missed anything in the world. I think it was wonderful. I must say, when I came back, I thought, well, you know, life's going to be a bit tame. It wasn't, but I got back into doing nursing again. And of course, we didn't have to be too fussy. You know? Well, we didn't really with any white aprons and things like that out there and starched caps. Come back to all that. One felt one was being civilised, I suppose, again, but I don't know if I took to that very kindly.
Yes, I was wondering, was it difficult to adapt?
Well, we had our difficulties. When you're living in tent, we had some pressure, one off, one on, and one in the wash, not always. We had a bit of a struggle. We were traveling an awful lot, you know. It wasn't always easy, but kids had haystacks around, one managed, and we could always fix up something in a tent just for the night and that. In the summer it was all right, but in the winter it wasn't quite so good. But we were always clean. We always had a clean shirt to put on. And I don't know if our shoes were always clean, but so we did our best. Mm-hmm.
Do you think your war experience had an effect on your post-war nursing? You know, were you getting an awful lot of experience that perhaps otherwise
you
wouldn't have had?
Afterwards, I came back to the Chelsea Hospital for Women again. I worked back for a year doing gynecology. Well, it's a far cry from the war experience. But I stayed for a year, and then one of the surgeons, Sir Charles Reed, who was the president of the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, he asked me if I would take over a nursing home he's got. He and Ted and Smillen, who was a urologist, they bought this nursing home in Queen's Gate. And I said, would I take it on? And I thought, that's a challenge. And so I did. And I was with them for 16 years. Sadly, he died. But last week, I was staying with his widow. We've been friends for years and years and years. And she's still alive. She's 90. And so when I go to London, I usually stay with her at the Canal Management. And I was there. And then we had plenty of variety. And I was a matronly, you see, for 16 years. And we had plenty of them. We used to have the royal family in there. Oh, yes, we did. We had Princess Mary and Princess Royal. And the Duchess of Kent used to come, Princess Marie, where she was then, she used to come a lot. And we had young Prince Michael of Kent. He had his appendix up there. I'm only just telling you this is just a sideline, nothing to do with the war effort or anything. But we had, you know, a lot of mice people and that used to come. memories. We had all sorts of people. But it was quite interesting. It was a change, a complete change from what I'd done before. And then after that, you see, when Charles died, Terence Mellon retired, and I was out of a job, and I thought, what do I do now? And so I took on the Hilton Hotel. And I ran the medical centre there. Don't profess anything to do with this. This has nothing to do with my war experience at all. But I was there for 16 years, from the opening in 62, until I retired. I retired 20 years ago.
So you had a very interesting nursing career. Yes. You know, not only your war experience, but...
I had lots of friends, and I was fortunate. I had some very good friends, and really nice people. I had a yacht, and I used to go down to the south of France with them every year when I was, in the years after the war. I was always away with them. Or I used to go with a friend to Switzerland, so I travelled quite a bit since then.
Did you keep a contact with the QAs? At this time.
Well, I didn't carry on with them. I thought, well, I've done my bit and that's that. So I didn't continue to be a member after that. Mm.
Do you think you've had recognition for, you know, the QAs generally and your group in particular? When was that?
I got in Nijmegen. It was after this. When we had been chasing around the field at night, and I got up running around the field at night in my pajamas, knocking people out. But it was one of those. But they did give me that. But it was not much. But I was quite proud to have it. But when you see them ten a penny given to the raised food from that, it's a minor's military. It has got ML after it. That's the most important thing to me. I don't. It doesn't mean anything really now. It did at the time. At the time it did. My parents in the war, so please. Mm.
Leaving the QAs, did you get any sort of sense of being recognised by that organisation? For the work you had done?
I don't think so. No, we left and that was that. I didn't sort of get any further communications.
Do you go to any reunions or anything
like
that?
No, I haven't been to them. No, I've never been to any.
How about the 50th anniversary at the end of the war? Were you involved with any of those?
At the end of the war, the 40th anniversary, Mary and I went over to France. We revisited and we went went along the beaches and we went to the Pegasus Bridge, we went up there, Mary and I went together. We spent 3 days, I think, we went on the ferry, and spent a couple of nights there, and came back on the ferry. At least we had a great time.
Was it important to go back?
Yes, it was. It was. And to go with someone like that, as we've been with years. I'm afraid that most of our friends that were out there, a lot of our colleagues have died or, just gone away. So we're the only two that keep together now. Our last one died 2 years ago, I think. She lived at Clare out there. He was a friend of Mary's.
Well, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your war experience. That would be lovely. Thank you.